Hey, this is Shai Davidi. You're listening to The Walk-Off with Scott and Adam.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's The Walk-Off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
Well, we have had a heck of a week when it comes to guests, my man.
It's been great.
It's been great. Thank you so much to everyone who is tuning in, by the way. Welcome to The Walk-Off. I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by Adam Mack. I know we had Arden Zwelling of Sportsnet on the show last Friday in our episode, and our views are phenomenal right now. Thank you so much for checking that out. And of course, very thankful to have Mr. Zwelling come on the show. And then on Tuesday, we had Ben Nicholson-Smith, who wasn't able to do a Zoom with us, and that's why our audio on his is a little bit off, because we had to record it over the phone. But it was a phenomenal interview. And what was really cool is so many of you in our Discord, which, by the way, if you are interested in joining our Discord, there is going to be a little link at the bottom of this here that you can join us with. And so all of our Discord folks gave us a bunch of questions for Ben Nicholson-Smith, and that was literally the whole 17 minutes. He gave us 15 to 20 minutes, and so we hit that on the head, and it was pretty much all listener questions, which was very cool. Great job on everyone's part. And then just last night, we sat down with Shai Davidi. We are just rolling through this Sportsnet crew.
Yeah.
But great interview with him. He sat down with us for almost a full hour. We didn't wish to release it last night just in case something broke overnight here, and then we would talk about it, Adam and I, and then tag that on with the interview. Of course, still nothing has happened, so we're pretty up to date with that. We'll throw to Shai in just a moment here. We also sat down with Andrew Stoughton yesterday afternoon, formerly of The Athletic. He now does The Bat Flip, which is a blog on Substack, and phenomenal Blue Jays content. He actually had an article all about Rogers possibly selling off some of their stocks in the Blue Jays. So we delve right into that. So we're going to release that on Saturday. And just a heads up to everyone here, our talk with Shai Davidi and our talk with Andrew Stoughton, although it is everything Blue Jays, we do not cross streams. The Ghostbusters would be very thrilled with us. We were great. So all very different topics. So we're going to release Andrew's interview tomorrow, Saturday, so you can look forward to that. Thank you again, everybody, for tuning in. Really appreciate it. You can follow us on Instagram, The Walk-Off Podcast, on Twitter at Walk-Off Podcast. We've got TikTok up and going, and you can also join the Discord. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Enjoy Shai Davidi. So excited for today's guest. We had such a great chat with him last time he was on the show. Thrilled to have him back. Blue Jays insider, Sportsnet analyst for everything baseball, Shai Davidi. Welcome back to the show, my man.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, we're excited to chat with you, buddy. You get no time off, it looks like. You're just as busy as you were last time we chatted with you.
Well, it's a different sort of busy. This is off-season busy, which is the worst kind of busy, actually, because you don't have the fun of actually going to a ballpark and seeing the ball game. And, you know, thankfully we got 2 months of that here this summer, which was awesome after, you know, a season and a half of covering baseball via Zoom. So definitely was a fun ending, certainly a disappointing one for Blue Jays fans and the team, and, you know, certainly understandable why. But, you know, there was a big step back towards normalcy, and, you know, hopefully 2022 looks a lot like 2019.
Did you know how much you missed it? Like, was it a little surprising how much you missed just going to the ballpark and having some normalcy?
No, I think I knew how much I missed it. Like my first live game back was the All-Star game, which I was fortunate enough to cover. It was the first event, actually technically was the Futures game. And I remember just kind of watching the game, and it was a little bit kind of like I felt this like this weird Canadian hatched back into the wild, into a world without COVID restrictions, since Ontario was still just barely coming out of lockdown at that point. And, you know, I walked in the press box and I've got my KN95 mask on, and it's just like the before times. Nobody's in a mask. We're like elbow to elbow with our neighbors. I was kind of sitting there in shell shock for a little bit, but, you know, I was watching the game playing, and there was just sort of a routine 6-3, I think it was. And I just remember being able to see the whole field and just how everybody was covering and watching the catcher back up, and, you know, how some of the fielders were moving into different positions. And I was like, man, I haven't seen that in a year and a half. I really missed that, just the simplicity of it. So, you know, it was weird for a while being back in person, but it was a good weird. And it started becoming a bit more normal towards the end of the year. But definitely, I think there was a newfound appreciation, and I certainly think I knew how much I missed it.
It's funny how you watch a game live and you forget how fast everything is happening. I know that when we were talking to Arden, that was one thing he brought up, was just like, oh yeah, like these guys are moving. Like,
oh, 100%. There was one play in the first, I think it was the first game back, like everything's a blur. I'm pretty sure it was against the Royals. I can't remember. I think Nicky Lopez might have been one of the base runners, but there were just a few different pieces of that play that got disjointed, and somebody should have covered who didn't cover a base. And the Casey, I think, ended up scoring a run on it. And I remember turning, I turned to Arden, actually. I said, can you imagine if we were trying to figure out this play off TV? But we could see the whole thing in front of us, right? And it was there were about six or seven things that went wrong on that play in different parts of the field. Like, there is no way that a TV camera could capture it. And it was cool just kind of watching it and seeing the play in totality, as opposed to just what the lens allows you to see. So that was certainly something that we appreciated. It was just, I mean, yeah, the power of the game too, you know, the speed, just how strong these guys are, man. Like, these guys, mm-hmm. like, they're unreal. And, you know, the athletes are getting better as each new generation comes in too. So, you know, the game that you watch it live now, you know, I think back to the first game I went to, I think in 84 or 85, you know, and no disrespect then, but, you know, the quality of athlete now is just, you know, infinitely better.
Mm-hmm. Well, even as a viewer, it's funny that I had forgotten what a big deal it is to hear somebody call the game when they are there and can actually see what's going on, you know, like the amount of times at the beginning of the year where, you know, and I love Dan Shulman, but, you know, he's just pausing and he's like, I, you know, yeah, that's gone. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I had some conversations with Danny about that, and, you know, what a treasure he is, right? Like, we're so lucky to, I mean, I'm incredibly fortunate to call him a colleague, and I don't get to listen to him as much as other people as a result of that. But, you know, he's just so good. He's just the consummate pro. And if anybody was going to, you know, step up to that challenge, it's him. But, you know, I felt for him at times where he'd be like, I'm not sure what's happening right now. He's just doing his best to figure it along with everybody else, because, you know, when he's on the game, he's got an amazing eye for detail, and he picks things up and he really knows what's going on. So I think he, like all the broadcasters who had to work under those tough conditions, you know, it's an unreal job on their part.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. And by the way, Shai, your writing is great. Like, I really enjoyed it. And it's funny because it's probably an underappreciated part of what you do, but I really enjoy reading your stuff. Loved your article that you just had out about the Jays probably shifting their pitching needs from free agency to possibly going the trade route. Great stuff, man.
Oh, I appreciate that. It's really kind of you to say. And I started in writing and found my way into broadcasting. Certainly, it's still a passion. But, you know, I appreciate everyone who takes the time to read, because, you know, your time is valuable, and everybody, there's certainly a lot of options. So anyone who wants to stop and read, you know, I'm really grateful for it.
Well, I might be a rarity in November, but I'm such a baseball nerd. I'm just, content I can get. So, it's appreciated you're up there. Putting it out there. I'd love to start with the pitching market here. Things are beginning to unfold. Obviously, we just watched the Giants jump in early on stuff. Verlander's back to Houston. Syndergaard's off to the Angels. And then late Tuesday night, we watched 2021 Blue Jays starting pitcher Steven Matz get 4 years with the Cardinals. And I'm really curious on your thoughts on this deal. He got, honestly, longer than I was expecting. I didn't expect Matz to sign a four-year deal, but he also got less per year than I was kind of expecting. Is this where the market is headed, or is Matz a little bit of an outlier? Like, are pitchers going to be valuing years over maybe the AAV?
I don't know. I think pitchers or players in general, they sort of look at the total compensation, right? And, you know, is that package good for you? And, you know, I had the impression early on that, that area, the sort of Midwest region, was something that would have been of interest to him. And, you know, I certainly, if you go to the St. Louis, I mean, they do a lot of things right there, as evidenced by, you know, the consistency of their appearances in the playoffs. Of course, the junior varsity National League Central helps a little bit too. But, you know, I mean, they certainly do almost everything right there. So, you know, that's certainly part of the attraction. I think for him, what happens with pitchers in that middle tier, and we've seen this happen to quite a few guys in recent years, where there are certain teams whose budgets aren't going to take them into the upper tiers, right? And then there's sort of this lower tier where there's a lot of volatility, you don't know what you're going to get. So the middle class of pitcher, where there's still a little bit of upside, and, you know, Steven Matz still has a bit of upside, right? I mean, he's certainly got the downside to be a five, but there's certainly the upside there where he could be a three, a solid three on a good team. And so, you know, those kind of guys end up finding a bit of a stronger market. And, you know, I thought there was a possibility that he would have signed way back in early November. There was some momentum there for a deal during the GM meetings. And then I think the market kept expanding and they're like, let's slow it down here a little bit and let's examine all these different options. And he ended up having, you know, something like eight teams in the mix for him. And he had strong offers. You know, I was told that, you know, he strongly considered the Blue Jays. They've done a really good job in trying to bring him back.
But we're in on him quite heavily, eh?
That's what it sounds like. You know, I mean, I don't know dollar-wise what that looked like. There's some reports out there, it's 3 years, you know, which would seem to be about right. And I can see them not wanting to go to four. But, you know, those told that, you know, they were a serious consideration for him, but, you know, the St. Louis situation, I think, was better for him. It's a great spot for him, right? You know, out of the AL East, if there's no universal DH and the pitcher still hits, then, you know, he's naturally going to be removed from games twice through the order. So it kind of takes that out of play for him. He's got a tremendous defense, probably the best defense, or, you know, one of the best defenses in Major League Baseball behind him. A tough place to hit, like all those pieces, like he's really set up well for success there. I think that, you know, a lot of teams could look at him and dream on him, and sort of he becomes one of those guys. You know, Disclafani did really well for someone, you know, who's had trouble staying on the field. Andrew Heaney for a guy coming off a very difficult year. You know, so I think teams end up looking at these guys who have some upside and maybe a little bit less volatility than the lower tier. And those guys end up getting bid up because they're more affordable than the top end guys. And it's a shot at maybe getting elite level or top level performance.
So while we're on Matz here, I did want to bring up Steve Cohen doing his best to continue to the tradition of terrible Mets ownership and front offices. Tweeted angrily at Matz and his agent that he was pretty upset that they didn't get the last kick at the can kind of thing. This is just weird, right? Like, this sort of stuff just happens all the time. Cohen's probably overreacting.
I mean, maybe. I was trying to think about this. Like, I was trying, like, the obvious impression is everybody sort of knee-jerks it. Like, this is ridiculous.
No,
and rightly so, right? But could there be some benefit to this? Could there be some method? Because, like, I mean, he's not a dumb guy. Like, you don't become a billionaire by accident, right? I mean, I guess maybe you can be born into it, and as we've seen in certain cases. You don't make yourself into a billionaire by being a dummy. And so, you know, is there an element of this is a bit of a warning shot to other agents? Like, if you're going to behave in this way, you know, I'm not going to tolerate it. And look, as much as teams are going to look at it and say, oh, that situation's awful and it's crazy and I wouldn't want my players there, like, players need the Mets, right? Like, mm-hmm. you want them involved in your bidding. Because they do have money, and it's real money. Like, they paid Francisco Lindor $300 million, right? Like, that's real dollars that we're talking about there.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that certainly there would be, you know, I think there, a lot of people viewed it as, you know, this is a tantrum by a petulant billionaire who didn't get his way. There's certainly a degree of that, but... there's a part of me, and I am probably wrong about this, but I wonder if there's an element of, you know, warning shot, or if there's some small bit of method behind this madness.
I would agree with that. I think you're right in that there has to be a calculated element to this. There's no benefit otherwise, right?
Right. I mean, and it could be he's just blowing off steam, right? And, you know, that Twitter account is certainly been interesting and oft discussed. But I don't know. He certainly had time to think about that one. Right, because the agreement was reached on Tuesday, and then he's tweeting Wednesday morning. You know, there's enough of a gap there that, yeah, you could still be angry, but maybe you've had enough time to think about what you want to put out into the world.
That's a good point.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Shai, Kevin Gausman, and it's weird because I feel like he's becoming the Blue Jays' new Jay Bruce. Like, you just hear rumors that they're in on him every single year whenever he's available. There's interest from the Blue Jays. And he does seem like a really good fit. What do you like about Kevin Gausman? And do you personally, and obviously the Jays front office will decide this for themselves, but do you personally think he's the best fit for the Blue Jays in the free agent starting pitching market? And what money and years would you be comfortable seeing him get from the Jays?
Oh, wow. There's a lot there. So I actually had an interesting conversation with him at the All-Star game. And, you know, I asked him about how that situation played out in the offseason versus, you know, him turning down, I believe it was a 3-year deal from the Blue Jays for the 1-year QO. And he said that, you know, essentially that the QO was just such a strong number relative to his AAVs. And you know, curiously, I mean, not curiously, interestingly, it might have been sort of a similar situation that Matz was in if Matz had been extended a QO, right? And obviously different pitchers, but you know, someone coming off a strong rebound year in a situation where, you know, he's made some changes, you know, does Matz take the QO back at the beginning of November? I think he probably does, even though he ended up doing, you know, nearly $26 million better than the QO in total guarantee. You know, I still think that it's such a strong 1-year number that, you know, he'd have to replicate, you know, $8.5 million over 3 years after the QO to match what he got. And you know, unless he had a total collapse, you know, that's very achievable. So, you know, with Gausman, you know, I do think that he was impressed with what he saw from the Blue Jays. He obviously was familiar with Toronto from pitching in Baltimore all those years. He actually debuted in Toronto, so he's had some positive memories. And look, you know, he's coming from a organization that's done a very nice job of, you know, getting pitchers right and helping them, you know, be their best versions of themselves. Is he the best fit? I think you can make a strong case that Robbie Ray is the guy that the Blue Jays should bring back. You know, this is, I don't know that he'd want to pitch here or if they could get him, but you know, Max Scherzer is certainly in a lot of ways is sort of exactly what they need, right? Just like, you know, that proven, been through it all, you know, will kind of light a fire under everybody kind of guy. Yeah, you know, it's tough to argue against Max Scherzer in terms of your free agent options. So, you know, I think that is interesting. And, you know, from a financial standpoint, I don't know where things are going. Obviously, I you know, Ray and Gausman both have nine-figure ambitions right now. My belief, my understanding is that the Blue Jays feel they still have capacity for one more mega contract in this current financial cycle that they're in. And, you know, to me, part of the question is, you know, are you giving that to a pitcher? Are you giving that to, you know, someone like Marcus Semien? You know, I think in an ideal world, they would love to get Corey Seager, but I don't think Corey Seager is going to be moving off shortstop for them. And Bo Bichette is the Blue Jays shortstop. Yeah. So, you know, I think that's sort of where the Blue Jays are. And, you know, longer term, do you want to put this contract into a pitcher knowing how volatile pitching is? Or would you rather put that money into a position player where, you know, there are more ways to get the value? So, you know, I think those are sort of the debates right now. The other thing is I do think the Blue Jays could trade for that, you know, upper level starter that they need. And, you know, the Blue Jays have some assets. I think they're going to have to do some of their business and trade because they're going to need some financial efficiency. So I would guess that they end up trading for a pitcher, but I could certainly be wrong there.
So I know the name I'm about to throw out your way here is one that's going to raise the ire of some Blue Jays fans, but Marcus Stroman is all over Twitter talking about how great he is. This does rub fans the wrong way sometimes, but whether you enjoy Marcus Stroman's online persona or not, he is one of the best available pitchers out there. Do you believe Marcus Stroman is a frontline pitcher? He is, right? And is there any chance the Jays circle back on him?
Yeah, I mean, like, you look at the performance. I mean, it's tough to argue against the performance, right? Like, whatever criticism people may want to level at him, I mean, he just needs to show them the back of the baseball card, and, you know, that's it. You know, I do think Marcus is genuine when he said he loves Toronto and would be open to coming back here. You know, I mean, he literally got the city tattooed on his back. You know, or maybe his chest. I'm not sure where the tattoo was, but he did get a tattoo in Toronto.
Toronto Sky.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got it printed on his body one way or the other, you know? So, you know, I don't think you're doing that for whim or to pretend. So, you know, there's certainly a genuineness to that. You know, I'm not sure the way things ended here that relationship can be rekindled. You know, I think there were a lot of ill feelings, bad ways, and only the people involved can know for sure who's to blame for that, or whatever the case may be. But you know, I'd have a hard time seeing the Blue Jays circling back to Marcus Stroman based on the way things ended. And, you know, that was unfortunate because he certainly was genuine here and he's certainly a talent. And, you know, I wrote a fair bit at the time about, you know, how if the Blue Jays traded him away, they were going to spend a lot of time trying to recreate him. And here they are trying to recreate him. Although, you know, on the flip side, you know, they did use one of the pieces they got back for him to help get Jose Berríos, who's going to be locked up here long term. So, you know, they've certainly made the most of the return that they've gotten for him.
Well, bringing up Berríos, I mean, as we watch this kind of pitching market unfolds, it's kind of tough not to be even more excited about this deal, right? Like, Berríos really could wind up being the deal of the offseason, even though he was already a member of this team?
Well, I mean, I think from a long-term standpoint, sure, right? Because this was something that you needed to get done. And, you know, the Blue Jays had a window before you know, he wanted, before he started resuming his workouts, that he was like open to getting this done. Otherwise, he didn't want to have a negotiation hanging over his head. You know, the Blue Jays were certainly interested, and you know, the sense I got right away when, you know, the Blue Jays made the deal for him was that this was something that they hoped to do and that they felt that they could do in a way that the Twins couldn't. And certainly the, you know, for whatever reason, the Twins negotiations with the Twins never got anywhere. But, you know, the Jays and his agency, they were aligned on what the value looked like. They had what was a very efficient negotiation. You know, they obviously had their disagreements and their backs and forths, but, you know, they found a way to hammer this out, and they were, you know, by and large on the same page throughout the process, which doesn't always happen. So, you know, I think that led it together. It was very important for them. And this is a big piece, but, you know, like you said, he was going to be here next year anyways. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what they do to make 22 better is, you know, the real question for them right now. You know, like, I guess, you know, they took care of a long-term piece with this, which is important. And it maybe in that way, it does become sort of the deal of the offseason, as you said. But really, the test is going to be what they do to make 22 better, because this is a roster that needs some augmentation.
Mm-hmm. Well, talking of 2022 and just holes they need to fill, I saw a rumor just recently that Marcus Semien is after 7 years, which just seems like a very lengthy deal. And the fact he's with the Boris Corporation, though, I mean, you can't discount that it might happen. Marcus is 31. He's incredibly durable. I mean, he did it, which is funny how durable he is, because it's not talked about enough, I think. 162 games he played this year. Like, he played every single game. Can you see someone going 7 years on Marcus?
So here's the thing. When you're getting to a player, I kind of look at it a little bit sort of the way DJ LeMahieu's deal, right? This is probably going to be the last contract for Marcus Semien, right? And so, you know, the team that's committing the value, you know, like, you have an issue, like, how over how many years do you want to amortize that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, do you want to amortize it over 6? Do you want to amortize it over 8? And, you know, I think the big question becomes, you know, what's the total guarantee? And if you agree on the guarantee, because it's at the back end and, you know, you're probably not getting great value, you know, at the age 38, 39 seasons, you know, at that point, maybe it's just the team's way of spreading the cost over a longer period. So, you know, DJ LeMahieu did that for the Yankees last year. And, you know, maybe that's something that a team does to get Marcus Semien under contract. But, you know, I think the way that the game has generally treated aging curves and, you know, free agents at that age group, you know, we typically don't see deals of that length, although, you know, George Springer under similar circumstances got 6 years. So, you know, that maybe does bode well for him.
Yeah. Maybe even if they front load whoever takes him, front load the contract so that they're not dealing with it at the end, and just however that contract is structured, you know, organizations can get creative. Exactly like you said with LeMahieu, right? Like, that extra year, he still got the same, whether it was 5 or 6 years, pretty much it felt like, anyways. So,
yeah. And, you know, I mean, that was basically designed for, you know, them to work around the luxury tax threshold, the competitive value tax, the CBT. But, you know, ultimately, I think, you know, players tend to be willing to work with teams, and, you know, it's about the total value. And we've seen a lot of creativity, you know, but, you know, one thing to keep in mind with Marcus Semien is that, you know, he's on the Players Union's very influential executive subcommittee. He's going to be involved in the CBA negotiations. You know, I think any contract that he takes, he will have the bigger picture of the game in mind, because he'll want to establish a value that will help other players in the future. So, you know, I think that'll certainly be part of his thinking as he negotiates or examines his various options.
he's such an interesting case. I'm actually just really excited to see where he lands, what he gets, like what his value is on this market. So we'll move on here, and we brought it up at the very top of this interview here, the article that you wrote and was on the Sportsnet app yesterday about the Jays very possibly going the trade route for some of these spots that they need to fill. And I know it's impossible to know what direction this front office may take, but especially when it comes to targets. But I'm curious if you've heard anything on the pieces other teams are inquiring about from the Jays, and maybe some guys in the organization that the Jays may be willing to move to fill some of these holes that they need to fill.
Well, we've heard, myself and others on the beat, we've heard that, the Jays are getting a lot of calls on their catching, and which is quite obvious because there isn't a lot of catching in the market, and the Jays have a surplus, and they have Gabriel Moreno coming now. So, that's an obvious area for other teams to target, and they have an obvious surplus in the outfield, right? They've got four guys who can play regularly. And, that's certainly another area that the Blue Jays could trade from. Now, from a farm system perspective, they made obviously the big move for Berríos with Austin Martin and Simeon Woods Richardson. And, that took away two top 10 prospects from, their farm system. But, they still have a relatively deep system that they can use. I don't think the Blue Jays want to strip it down. But, one thought that I've had, and, I think is, maybe symbolic of where they are right now, is like you think back to after the 2016 season and Christian Yelich hit the market. And, the Jays had, talked a bit with the Marlins, and the Marlins had asked for something like, either Vladdy or Bo, plus Danny Jansen, plus Ryan Borucki, plus Anthony Alford, right? And, at the time with, a team on the decline, a team that needed some depth and was going to, in all likelihood, be facing a rebuild, that's a tough price to pay, right? Even for a player who is under great contractual control, the way Yelich is or was at that point, and, and the impact that he was going to provide. In many ways, you're hoping that one of the guys that you're trading away is going to become Christian Yelich as an offensive player. But where the Blue Jays are right now, they don't have time to wait for all their guys to develop, right? They've got to augment this group now. So, that type of a deal now makes more sense for the Blue Jays. So, I don't think he's available. I think you'd have to really twist the Twins' arm. But if you could look at someone like Polanco there, he'd be a great fit. He's got a good contract for 3 years, I believe. And then you can possibly extend him afterwards. And, part of what you're paying for when you trade him is the financial efficiency that he's providing. That's part of what your acquisition is. So, I think that type of a deal now makes more sense for them. I can't see a scenario in which they trade Gabriel Moreno. I guess I could imagine one, but it would be so ludicrous that nobody's going to do it. But I do think someone like Aurelvis Martinez, who was getting a lot of interest around trade deadline time, that's someone that teams are going to be interested in and maybe could be the centerpiece of a deal. So I do think they have a lot of opportunity to be creative. It's just, how willing are they going to be and what are the prices going to end up being?
Well, I actually love how many different directions this front office could go. Like, they are a creative bunch to begin with. Do you think that there's any chance that we see a major shakeup, like something like we saw December of 1990, right, when the Jays swapped Fred McGriff and Tony Fernandez for Joe Carter and Robbie Alomar? Like, is it possible we see a core piece move of a Shedder or a Teoscar?
I can't. Bichette and Guerrero, no, right?
that's what we wanted to hear.
I wonder about Teoscar, and not that I think the Blue Jays want to trade him, but there's sort of 2 years of contractual control there before he's eligible for free agency. are the Blue Jays going to be able to extend him and do all the other work, and then at some point shoehorn in a Bichette and Guerrero extension, which is going to be, you know, major money, and then while still augmenting the club. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe you just ride it out with Teoscar Hernandez for the next couple of years, and then he's a free agent, and see where things go from there. On the flip side, you know, maybe you examine where you can get what you can get for him, and maybe he's, you know, you're doing a need for need deal with somebody. A bit, maybe even a bit of a challenge trade. So, I just think that the Blue Jays, knowing the way they operate, they sort of try to examine all the different opportunities and then see what puzzle pieces they can fit together and then choose a route based on what they think is the best picture that they construct. So that would be the process that I think the Blue Jays would go through, whether and you know, so I think that they'll examine all kinds of wild scenarios. The vast majority of them have no chance of coming into reality.
Right. No, it's going to be interesting over the next couple of years, because they do, and the Jays have money, but they definitely do have some decisions to make on guys like Teoscar and stuff. If you are going to lock Bichette and Vladdy up long term, there's definitely going to need to be some shuffling of the cards, if you will. And you brought it up, Shy. And Gabriel Moreno, I mean, honestly, I feel like we talk about him every single week at this point. And he was just ranked as the number one prospect in the Arizona Fall League, according to MLB Pipeline, in a league filled with top prospects. And one thing that surprised me, actually, while I was reading his write-up about the Arizona Fall League, was that he had thrown out 47% of base stealers in the AFL this year. What have you heard on Moreno lately, and how high is this kid's ceiling? Because the more that we hear about him, the more everyone's like, kid's going to be a superstar.
It's funny, because I started hearing people raving about him, I think probably early 2019, before, I think he was, that's the year he was in Lansing. Mm-hmm. And I remember coming out of spring training, talking to some player development people. They're like, hey, you're like, make sure you're paying attention to this Moreno kid. Like, this, he's the real thing. And, you know, he's only sort of skyrocketed since. And even last year during the pandemic year, you know, he was among the Venezuelan kids who got stuck in Florida when the lockdown hit, who was being housed in a hotel there. And he found a way to be positive and to find ways to develop through that difficult time. The Blue Jays ended up rewarding him by bringing him up to their alt site. And, you know, this year, honestly, I was talking to Gil Kim, the Blue Jays player development, and he said, you know, they were waiting for, he was like putting up Bichette and Guerrero numbers at Double A, and they were like, well, let's see if the league slows him down. And the only thing that slowed him down was a broken thumb, because the league couldn't find a way to calm him down. So he certainly maintained that in the Arizona Fall League. And I think from sort of the club's perspective right now, they still want, they're very pleased with the growth that he's made and sort of his swing decisions. Like, he's one of those gifted contact hitters that can get bat to ball on, you know, any number of different pitches. And, you know, the Blue Jays have tried to get him to become a little bit more selective, saying just because you can hit that pitch doesn't mean that you should. And sort of, they really like the game there. They like the increased leadership he's showing in game calling and handling pitchers, and the way that he's taking charge in their pregame meetings, their postgame breakdowns, and those kinds of things. But, you know, he's also somebody who's missed a lot of reps, both because of the pandemic and because of the broken thumb this year. So from the defensive side, I think they want him to continue growing there. But that bat is going to force a decision on this team sooner rather than later. And, you know, at one point in time, it was, maybe he's up in, 22. And, you know, I think it's starting to trend towards when and not if.
It is interesting to see how they are going about Marino's development. I do enjoy seeing them give him the opportunity to play a little bit of third base, and I don't actually think that he's going to be a full-time third baseman, but it sure is nice to see them looking at ways to get that catcher's bat in the lineup every game. And it's going to be fun to watch how this all plays out with him, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the Blue Jays do love their positional flexibility, right?
But,
you know, the one thing that, or an interesting comp, you know, I was thinking about like Russ Martin when, you know, he was catching at the Dodgers early in his career. He started playing some third base there. You know, Russ was saying that, you know, he wanted to do that to just stay athletic so that he didn't feel like he was sort of stiffening up and losing the flexibility and mobility behind the plate. But, you know, the way things are going right now, if you can have a player who can, you know, get to a place where, you know, he can fill in at third and catch and do this, you know, that might work for the Blue Jays, because especially with the way they're set up right now, like, you know, Danny Jansen, I know, gets a lot of flack from people, but I don't know that the general public appreciates the value he brings behind the plate, the trust that he has in pitchers, his skill in game calling and game planning. Like, you know, the Blue Jays have spent a long time helping him grow into this. And, you know, full credit to Danny. You know, he's always put his defense, his catching, and his pitchers first, ahead of his hitting, and he's been really selfless and all those things. You know, he's a valuable piece. And so if, you know, you could have Moreno there where, you know, maybe create a job share where Moreno's playing a little bit third, maybe the occasional first, and then he's at DH and behind the plate, and Danny Jansen's behind the plate the rest of the time. You know, that's a pretty good setup you have at catcher. So, you know, I think the Blue Jays want to keep a lot of options open. And then, you know, with Carlos Delgado all those years ago, you know, the Blue Jays got to a point where they're like, you know, this bat is too valuable for us to risk it behind home plate. We need to put him somewhere else. He ended up at first base via left field. And maybe there's a scenario where, you know, Mourinho's bat is just, they're like, we can't risk it behind the plate. You know, we're going to dream that we have JT Realmuto here, but, you know, maybe we just put him at somewhere else on the diamond and just take the bat and not worry about the defensive piece.
I just love how many top prospects this team has been blessed with over the last few years. It's pretty cool to see the system continuing to bring up guys like Aroldis and Moreno and stuff like that after witnessing it with Bo and Vladdy, obviously. It's a pretty solid system, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit thinner now than it has been, and, you know, understandably so. And, you know, Gunnar Hoglund, their first rounder from last year, you know, that's it's an interesting pick, and, you know, he's in their top 10. But, you know, his development is going to be slowed significantly by that recovery from the Tommy John. So, you know, there are some gaps in the system right now. You know, like Mark Shapiro liked to talk about waves of prospects, and sort of one wave has kind of hit, or a couple waves have hit now. And, you know, sort of the, you know, the water is, you know, pooling again, waiting for that next wave. So there is a bit of a gap right now, but, you know, I think from the perspective of, you know, of where this roster is, you know, from both a contractual standpoint and a talent standpoint, you know, what the Blue Jays need now is just, you know, to be able to integrate a player or two every year, as opposed to needing this critical mass of prospects to turn around a franchise.
Absolutely. So last week, the Canadian government announced that it lifted the national interest exemption that allows unvaccinated players and athletes to travel to Canada. So starting January 15th, 2022, unvaccinated players will be restricted from traveling to Canada. And I can imagine that this has some massive implications for the Blue Jays and who they sign and the directions they take. And I'm curious if you've heard anything on what this means for opposing teams with unvaccinated players.
All right, so as we're speaking, and it's Thursday, November 25th at this point, what I know as of now is, I think, is that the Blue Jays are still trying to fully grasp what this is going to look like for them. what this is going to mean for them and for Major League Baseball, and what the potential impacts of that are going to be beyond that. So, you know, I think the Blue Jays have been doing some work on that. Obviously, the government, between, you know, the terrible things that are happening in BC, and we obviously wish people there the best who are fighting the effects of the flooding there. The government certainly has some bigger things on their plate right now. But, you know, I think the Blue Jays are trying to sort out that piece, trying to get an understanding of what it means. And, you know, I think that's something that has to factor into their thinking when they're making player acquisitions, because if they were to acquire someone who was or who is unvaccinated and does not have an interest in becoming vaccinated, then, you know, they could potentially acquire someone who they can't use. So, you know, that certainly has to be in there. Or certainly has to be a consideration at this point, which is why I think their desire, their attempts to try and figure out, you know, is this a forever thing? Is there a pathway to a national interest exemption again? Is there, you know, what are the factors that will determine this? You know, all those pieces are in play right now for the Blue Jays, and, you know, they certainly do have implications both for them and then, you know, for visiting clubs as well.
Well, okay, so right now with like these vaccine passports and whatever we want to call it that seems to be going on across Canada, if anybody wants to go somewhere, movie theater, a restaurant, or whatever that requires proof of vaccination, the alternative is just or show that you've, you know, taken a rapid test result and have tested negative recently, right? At your own expense. Could that not just be a simple solution? Like, if we bring these guys in, we just test them, and I mean, it might cost a little extra, but shouldn't that just be a simple workaround?
Well, I mean, that it certainly depends on, you know, how the government's going to view the policy and how strictly they want to enforce it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the way the announcement was written, you know, there were some pathways to exemptions from that. You know, that there were, you know, some reasons that, you know, prevented someone from becoming vaccinated, they could make some exceptions, but, you know, the government has to decide, and, you know, the whether that's something they, a path they want. And, you know, you think about the term, you know, it was a national interest exemption, that the athletes had, and this isn't just sort of baseball players. It's NHL players. It's major league. Although the NHL did not request an NIE this year, National Basketball Association, amateur and pro athletes competing in different events. Basically any arriving athlete, not just baseball players, you know, the government had determined it's in the national interest to grant these people an exemption from the quarantine rules because of this. So can Major League Baseball negotiate another one of those? Can the Blue Jays convince them that, you know, the modified quarantine plan that they had in place last year would still be a proper way to do this, with enhanced testing for players who were unvaccinated? You know, that's entirely possible, but, you know, the government would have to make that decision. And so, you know, I can understand part of, you know, the government's thinking here is in trying to find ways to encourage people to be vaccinated, you know, trying to encourage Canadians who are on the fence to, you know, decide that, you know, this shot is safe and there are benefits to having this shot because it allows our entire society to move closer to normalcy. But, you know, I think that's ultimately going to depend on whether that's, you know, the government feels that there's a national interest in that, and if that makes sense.
What an interesting little caveat that the Jays and just Canadian sports teams in general need to kind of consider going forward, right?
Right. Well, you know, I mean, the different sports leagues have all taken different approaches. And, you know, I think the Nets with the Kyrie Irving situation, you know, they've drawn a line in the sand, and, you know, that's certainly one way to handle it, saying, like, if you're a part of this, this is what the requirement is. And, you know, we saw that with some of the NHL clubs too, saying, yeah, like, you're going to hurt us if you don't do this. And, you know, there's certainly that aspect of it. You know, you wish that, you know, the science would be enough to convince people. You know, I remember talking to my son before he got his first shot, who was, he was 13 at the time. And, you know, he had heard and TikTok or Snapchat, and he heard all these kinds of stories about these side effects that he was going to get, and where that all these spike proteins were going to collect in parts of his, certain parts of his body, and things like that. And so, you know, I kind of went through the science of it with them, saying this is why I feel this, based on this research and talking to, you know, these experts and listening to what these scientists who've done real research as opposed to just sort of reading up on Facebook. You know, this is why they say...
You're not following internet scientists?
Well, you know what? I mean, like, I did not consult with Joe Rogan. it was you know, personal decision. But I wanted someone who had done a little bit more direct lab work than Joe on this one. And so, you know, like, there are ways to kind of convince people that, you know, you can do this and make them feel safe, and that it doesn't need to be coercive. But, you know, at a certain point, if people want to keep their heads in the sands, you know, I mean, everybody does have their right. And, you know, the majority also has the right to exclude you if you don't want to take this step. So, you know, that's kind of the reality of the situation at this point. And you are free to not take the shot, but in making that decision, there are consequences to that.
Absolutely. 100%. Shai, always appreciate your time, man. Just the fact that you're sitting down with a little podcast out of Alberta, we really do appreciate it, and we love chatting ball with you. Do you have time for a little... I want to talk a little bit of broadcasting with you, if you got a few more minutes.
Yeah, sure. No problem.
Yeah? Awesome. And I mean, obviously, we're in the dead of it now, right? Rumors are swirling. Players are starting to sign contracts. Sources and breaking news fast has become just a bigger and bigger part of what you do. And Twitter is kind of moving that even further ahead. How difficult is it sometimes to confirm stuff that is breaking? And have you personally ever run into a situation where maybe a source or some intel isn't quite what you were hoping it would be? How do you continue to stay accurate, I guess, is the question.
Well, you know, I think for me, it's who's telling you, right? And if you know, if I'm going to, you know, report something, I'm going to generally want someone who's directly involved, or who has a hand in it, and is 100% certain of what's happening. So, you know, I think there's sort of, you know, you create sort of an information food chain, right? And, you know, if it's something that isn't, you know, your information needs to be coming from something somewhere high up on the food chain, you know, you may take information that you get from lower down the food chain, and then, you know, check that, cross-reference that, and make sure that's okay. You know, and that's sometimes where you may need two or three people to corroborate something. But, you know, if you're getting it from somebody who, you know, you can be certain that they know what's up, then, you know, maybe it's one person at that point. So, you know, I think these things are all a matter of, you know, how correct you want to be. And, you know, some people are okay not batting 1,000. For me, I believe kind of part of what I've established is that if I say something, it's right. And, you know, I'm not, especially with stuff that is going to come out eventually, I don't want to kill myself to try and be first on something. When, you know, if it's something that everybody's going to find out anyways. So, you know, I'd rather be right than be first every time, and, well, you know, try to give people the best information about that.
It's funny how you put that, because credibility is so difficult to build, but yet so easy to just lose, right?
Well, yeah. And yeah, I think that because of the way news cycles have changed, because of the way, you know, social media has changed the game, there are some people who aren't as afraid about being wrong as maybe they might have been in the past, because it kind of gets washed away pretty quickly. But I just think that, you know, when you do this job, you have a relationship with, you know, the people who are reading you and following you and, you know, engaging with the team. You know, if you're not going to be as responsible as you can be, then, you know, you're doing them a disservice. And that's not, to me, that's not a healthy way to have the relationship. So, you know, my hope is that, you know, when people, you know, see what I put out there or what I write, that they have faith in it, that it's researched and that it's informed and that, you know, it's as correct as we can get. Because, I mean, look, we all peddle in information to some degree. We're all victims or products of what people are willing to tell us. And, you know, we all try to get as full a picture as possible. You know, so there are times where, you know, maybe, you know, there's some information that there's some agenda in or whatever the case may be. But I think that what, you know, my goal is, I think what everyone covering the Blue Jays goal is to try and just give you as accurate a picture as we can get in any given time, and not just kind of sort of, you know, chuck balls up at half court, hoping it finds a basket.
Yeah. So last question here for you, and I am curious about, because you're at this point an experienced sports broadcaster, you've been doing it for years, and I know that the life and work combo sometimes a difficult thing to kind of balance, right? And I know, like, as a stand-up comic, one of my biggest detriments when I first started those first 5 to 10 years is that I completely killed my family life and my social life to do this. And now that I'm like almost 15 years in, I've realized how important it is to have an actual life outside of it. Have you found that balance, and how difficult is that to maintain?
Well, it's surprising how giving up nights and weekends for a consistent basis can impact everything else, you know, for decades. You know, I think that, you know, for me, like, one, if you have a passion for what you're doing, and, you know, obviously you have a passion for comedy, I have a passion for covering sports, you know, that's really important, right? Because, you know, you're doing this because for the right reasons. And then I think for, in terms of your personal life, if you're able to surround yourself with people who understand that, you know, you have, that you're pursuing a passion and that you're doing it for, you know, the betterment of, you know, your family and your entire situation, then, you know, I think that goes a long way. You know, I'm very fortunate that, you know, my wife, you know, we met in journalism school at the university formerly known as Ryerson, and the, you know, we, so she understands the industry, she understood the industry, and, you know, very helpful. But that doesn't always make it easy, right? You know, when I was covering the 2015 playoffs, you know, that season I was gone. I did, I think, 67 of the 81 road games. I was at spring training, was at All-Star, was at postseason. I was at almost every home game. That was a lot. And, you know, my son, my older son, who's pretty close to me, a little bit closer to me than my younger one, who is a bit clingier to his mom. You know, he was like, when the Blue Jays got eliminated, he came up to me and said, "Hey, I was the only kid in school who was happy the Jays lost. Aww. Because now you get to be home." Right. And so, you know, that part of it is difficult. So you do put a toll on your family, but I try to be as present as possible when I'm around and, you know, contribute and be parts of their lives. You know, like, you know, I've coached their hockey teams all the way through. I haven't coached them in baseball because I haven't been able to around enough, but, you know, my older son is swimming competitively and I'm always at meets with him when he's at meets and things like that. You know, my younger son is a bit more into tennis, which not a game that I'm good at, but, you know, I try to participate in that as much as possible. And then look, you know, I think if people are understanding of you and you are giving of yourself to the people that you care about, then you can find a way to maintain that. But it's certainly not easy. And you have to be committed to your personal life in order to make it work, because, you know, you don't get the ability to cruise control it because you have the gift of constant presence.
Yeah. That's great, man. Thank you so much for such insightful and in-depth answers. And we always enjoy sitting down and chatting with you. Really appreciate you coming back on the show.
Yeah, no problem. Enjoyed the chat. And, you know, hopefully we'll be talking again when spring comes around.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Guys. Appreciate
Thanks, Shai.
Thanks, care. Take care, guys.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Osborne with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.